Hello, I'm Jerry St. Just. This is number 0177, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0177. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet actor Fred Cross, who is one of the many actors on The Joe Schmo Show, a program which brings several actors together and one real participant who believes all the actors are like him, a contestant on a reality show.
He is the center of a storm of crazy. He is in the eye of a storm of crazy that has been built completely around him by money and networks and people that have power and make decisions. It's all been about this guy.
Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor is back to talk about the top words and phrases of 2012. Were there any surprises on the list this year?
The biggest surprise was that there were 8 words and phrases that all spoke about the apocalypse, Armageddon, end times, things like that. And that there was this overwhelming sense that usually, you know, you can pick up the sense of the year as you look back at the words. And the number one word was actually used too, but it's the same concept of apocalypse or Armageddon.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He didn't go to Times Square on New Year's Eve. That's because it's no fun being part of the throng unless you're hanging out with the media.
When you're with the regular people, not standing in some fancy stand with all the big deal journalists, it's horrible. I mean, it's cold. There's no place to eat. You can't make a pee. The guy standing next to you had a garlic pizza. I mean, it's really, you do it once in a lifetime and never ever again, unless you're on the stand with all the hotshot journalists.
And of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0177, was Jerry St. Just, who works security at the Dominion Square building in downtown Montreal. And Jerry keeps everyone safe. Thank you very much, Jerry, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, a 50-year-old Florida woman was locked up after allegedly beating up her younger boyfriend during, well, shall we call it unsatisfying sex. Jenny Scott was booked into Manatee County Jail on a misdemeanor battery charge for allegedly whacking Gilberto De Leon, age 32, with a stick and threatening to upgrade her weapon of choice to a pipe wrench. The arrest report indicated Scott became enraged when her paramour wrapped up his part of the tryst first and then decided to call it quits. How can I put this delicately? Basically, they were orally stimulating each other, and let's just say 6 finished before 9. Anyway, a witness called the sheriff's department after seeing Scott on top of De Leon punching and scratching him. Scott refused to go quietly, and police told her she would be maced if she didn't stop kicking at the patrol car window. Investigators concluded alcohol played a significant role in the fracas. Yeah, figure? Well, you know, it could have been worse. I mean, anger usually makes people clench their teeth. Yeah. Anyway, Brunswick County, North Carolina Sheriff's Deputy Joe Cherry tried to stop a car, but the driver wouldn't pull over. Lights whirling and sirens screaming, he gave chase, and the driver called 911. No, said Jennifer Melissa Herring, age 37, according to the police report. There was no emergency. She was calling with an offer. She'd be willing to stop if the authorities paid her $300,000. But whatever the dispatcher said to Herring didn't stop her. She led Cherry on a 15-minute chase before she got trapped in a dead-end street. Authorities didn't pay her. They charged her with driving while impaired, driving with a revoked license. Why do they always have a revoked license? You ever notice that? A reckless driving and more. She had to wait for a bond hearing. Wow. Do you think she's that stupid when she's sober? That's what I want to know. Elsewhere, over the years, I have gone on about pigeons, a bird that we could all possibly do without, but I may have to stand corrected on this one. Notwithstanding its nuclear submarines, ballistic missiles, and spy satellites, France maintains Europe's last squadron of military carrier pigeons. Legislator Jean-Pierre Decool lauds the pigeons and campaigns for their upgrade, warning that in the event of war or other catastrophe, the birds would be a valuable messaging system. Pigeons have been used at times in the current Syrian civil war, and until very recently, according to a November Wall Street Journal dispatch, pigeons wearing harnesses had been used by a hospital in Normandy to ferry blood samples to a testing lab, which, by the way, is a 25-minute flight. Birds carrying blood? Yikes! Anyway, regular listeners of this show know that I often like to rail against nanny states, and the UK usually leads the pack, so here's the latest entry. A British health and safety watchdog criticized teachers for banning yo-yos on a playground, saying safety concerns are based on myth. The Health and Safety Executive, a non-governmental public agency, said teachers at the school, whose name was not reported, went over the top in banning children from playing with yo-yos on the playground. The organization's Mythbusters panel, which criticizes organizations for taking safety measures deemed to be based on myth, said there is no real reason to ban the traditional toys. The group questioned other recent restrictions, including the case of a charity that chopped banning knitting needles to prevent people from stabbing themselves. Oh, this is a watchdog group that is after my own heart. That's all I have to say. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the head of the Percy School in Cambridge, England, recently instituted a 10-second rule for minor disciplinary infractions. Now, students could avoid punishment if they quickly produced a clever explanation for their misbehavior. Getting children to talk their way out of a tight corner in a very short period of time, said Ed Elliott, encourages creativity and could produce a generation of British entrepreneurs. Said a supporter, often the ones who get further are the artful dodgers, who bend the truth. Elliott warned, though, that out-and-out falseness would not be tolerated. You know, there is definitely a certain creativity that's being tapped here. Neat idea, I say. Neat idea. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Actor Fred Cross is a very busy journeyman actor who you've probably seen in lots of television shows such as Parks and Recreation, Criminal Minds, Chuck, Desperate Housewives, and House, just to name a few. He can also be seen in this upcoming season of The Joe Schmo Show. And Fred is on the line with us right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Fred.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're going to be, I guess this is the third installment of the Joe Schmo Show. The first one was in 2003. The second one was in 2004. So it's been a while.
Right, yeah. This is season three that they had a bit of a hiatus, and then they decided to bring it back.
And for those who are unfamiliar with the show, it's basically sort of like a reality show within a reality show, correct?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. A lot of people confuse it with a prank show, but it's not. It really is a show that's almost a spoof or a satire on, you know, today's reality shows.
Basically, what happens in the show is one person is a real-life contestant on a reality show, and he thinks everyone else are real-life contestants on said reality show, but everyone else, they're actors.
Yeah, he is the center of a storm of crazy. He is in the eye of a storm of crazy that has been built completely around him by money and networks and people that have power and make decisions. It's all been about this guy.
Now, you're a trained actor. You also worked with Second City, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So you have an improv instinct as well.
I like to think so, yeah.
Is this a blending of both of those disciplines, of being a trained actor and working with a script, but also improv? Because there's one person who doesn't know what's going on.
Right. Yeah, he is the Joe. His name's Chase Rogan from Pittsburgh. He's the wild card. So no matter what, however you script this show, it's never going to go the way you want because, you know, he's a real person not acting out the script. And so you just kind of have to hope he's going to do what you have kind of guided him to do. But, at, you know, at any time, and he does this many times, he takes a left or a right turn that we all have to adjust on the fly and just, and without, you know, consulting with each other, just knowing, oh, crap, this thing just happened. Let's deal with it and hope that we're all on the same page.
So basically, is it your job and the producer's job and your other fellow actor's job to make this guy's life as difficult as possible for the period of time?
That's a good way to put it. No, it seems that way a lot of times. But really what it is, you know, I was a fan of season one. I thought it was a fantastic show back in 2003. And I think it's a great show now, even more so now, because, you know, reality shows, like most people know, there's very little reality in reality shows anymore. It's a very scripted, very produced, highly polished view of, you know, these people's lives or this contestant game show or what have you. But this show really, really comes at a place, and it sounds kind of cheesy, but it comes from a place of love. You know, it takes this guy who is just morally amazing. Like, if anyone watched season one, Matt Gould, who was the very first Joe Schmo, everyone loved them, and it's because they went out of their way to find somebody who is not one of the stereotypes that is portrayed by actors. You know, not the dick or the hot model or, you know, these crazy situations. He's just a really upright guy that ultimately you want to give $100,000 to, as long as he doesn't screw himself out of it.
Now, one of the things that makes it difficult for any reality show, never mind one that is a reality show layered on a reality show, is that there's always the concern that with each subsequent season, somebody catches on to the way the game is played. Does that make it more difficult this third go around? I know you weren't on the first two, but was it a difficult task for the producers to come up with an idea and a premise that people wouldn't be able to see through very quickly?
I mean, I can't speak for the producers or the writers, but you know, I do know that there was a reason why there was a big break in between the season two and season three, and it's, you know, I think it was that fear. Once people realized there was this show out there, then every reality show that anyone was ever on, when they were asked to do a crazy thing, which is, you know, most reality shows, they may ask, is it the Joe Schmo show? And so that was one of the concerns, not to mention the fact that, you know, a lot of the actors, especially, you know, Ralph Garman, who hosted season one, season two, and this season, there's a fear that he'd recognize him. I mean, Ralph plays Mark Wahlberg's dad in Ted, which came out in the summer, which was like a week before we started shooting. And so, you know, if Chase had seen Ted and recognized Ralph from that movie, that could have, you know, screwed everything. So there's always that fear, but you have to get people who know what they're doing, you know, so you have to get people who are professionals, really.
Now, let's talk about your character. I understand you play Stan, and you are an American Sign Language interpreter for one of the other participants on the show, Carly, and you actually are an ASL interpreter, correct?
I'm not. I'm not an interpreter. I'm not certified. But my grandma, she helped raise me, and so I've known sign since I was 3 years old. You know, she was one of the primary languages I learned growing up. So her sign is actually a little more antiquated than ASL, because she learned sign before there was ASL, and so my sign, therefore, is a little more antiquated. And, you know, I think an interpreter would have been more correct with a lot of the signage that I did, but considering the fact that we're improvising and that half my brain has to be on Chase and the half of it has to be on the signing, you know, that they're, I think I did a fairly good job. I mean, I think I did made my grandma proud.
Is it, and again, it goes back to one of the questions I asked earlier, is it more difficult as an actor to play a role like this when part of your job is to pull the wool over another participant in the show?
Yes. The hard part really was none of us were prepared for how exhausted we would be, because, you know, you're staying in character this whole time. It's almost like being a spy. And I constantly thought of myself in that way, because you're so deep undercover that you can't show any cracks. And so you're so deep undercover, you almost, I had a little bit of an identity crisis at one point because I didn't hear the name Fred for 2 weeks, and I was only Stan by everybody called each other, you know, the name that our characters were, and so for a while there, I forgot that I was Fred and I was Stan while I was living at the house for a couple of days. It sounds really, really, you know, method acting, but it was just really just the easiest way, is just to kind of forget who you were, and you're living in the situation, just become that person.
Almost every acting experience is something that you can draw from for the future. So what has being on the Joe Schmo Show done for you as an actor?
I now know if I'm ever on a set for anything, not to trust anyone.
Really?
That is what I know. No, I'm just kidding. It's a great show, and it was really a nice. The great thing about improv, the thing that I love about improvisation is that when you're doing comedy improv or any kind of improv, you're working with a group of people. There's a dynamic, and the cast was so fantastic, and so many of us were just on the same page, you know, so often, and it's really nice to be able to kind of lob a ball at somebody and have them kind of hit it at the park. That's all we did, was set each other up for the moments that were scripted and hope, you know, that went the way that we wanted it to go. But sometimes if Chase wasn't into it, we'd had to kind of finagle him into it or set somebody up, bring up a topic of conversation that wasn't really, it was kind of a non sequitur, and, you know, let the other castmate pick it up from there. But really, with anything else, like working together, you're working on something with other people, it's really important that you just trust them and know that they are going to trust you, you know.
What are some of the other things you've been working on of late?
This is a spot on The Office, which will air February, I want to say 17th, but sometime in February it'll air. It's a fun little part, and then that's pretty much it. I just played Scrooge in my theater company's Christmas Carol at a beautiful place called Descanso Gardens in Pasadena, and that went well. And other than that, my wife and I are just trying to stay sane, and we just moved to a new place, so we're trying not to tear each other's hair out.
Your wife is also an actress, correct?
She is. We actually met at Second City.
Ah. Now, do you prefer working on stage or in front of a camera?
It depends on the project. Normally, I mean, on stage is almost always more fulfilling for an actor, just because it's just more kind of the reason why we got into acting. But there's a lot of fun. I mean, the Joe Schmo Show was going to be one of the highlights of my life, because it was such an amazing experience. And I mean, there's nothing. I don't think there's anything I'm ever going to do that's going to come close to that. So the Joe Schmo Show was on par with most of the things I've done on stage, and I've done some really fun things on stage.
You know, there have been some actors who have themselves gone on reality television shows. Now that you've experienced a fake reality show, would you ever think of doing a real one?
You know, that is a, if you ever talk to Lorenzo Lamas, who was on our show, that's a great question to ask him. He was, I don't think I would be on a reality show. You certainly do see, you look behind the curtain and you see that it's a lot of strings and pulleys. I mean, it's not real. Most reality shows aren't real. And so there's a lot of work, especially in the last 10 years or so, since Joe Schmo first aired, you know, 8-9 years ago, that reality shows have become so written and so polished that it's just too much work for me. I'd rather just be an actor sitting in my trailer until they call for me and then get my job done.
The latest season of the Joe Schmo Show begins on the air on January 8th. Fred, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Pleasure to have a chance to talk to you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Actor Fred Cross from the Joe Schmo Show. The new season goes on the air beginning January 8th on Spike TV. Again, you can visit Fred's website at fredcross.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0177, and you'll find the links mentioned.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the words and phrases that were big in 2012. Plus, we'll chat with Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, there is an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news on the program. Also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. British hotel chain Travelodge UK said some of the oddest items left in its hotels include a pet python, breast implants, and a bucket of live crabs. The budget chain said items in its lost and found include a pet python named Monty Python, get it? A winning Euro Millions lottery ticket, the prop used as Harry Potter's wand in one of the films, a diamond-encrusted iPhone, a bucket of live crabs, and a set of women's breast implants. The hotel chain said the most popular items left in their hotel rooms include pajamas, phone and laptop chargers, teddy bears, toiletry items, and electronics. The company said the 20,000 books left in its hotel room during the past 12 months include 7,000 copies of 50 Shades of Grey. Wait a minute. 7,000 copies of 50 Shades of Grey and breast implants? What the heck is going on in these rooms? Anyway, someday, it's hoped you'll never have to hear a story about someone so clueless they post incriminating evidence about themselves on Facebook or some other social networking site and end up getting busted. Unfortunately, today is not that day. And so we tell you about the latest person who has yet to learn that Facebooking your criminal dealings can get you into trouble. Authorities in Oregon say Jacob Cox Brown was arrested after he fessed up online to a booze-fueled hit-and-run on New Year's Eve. His Facebook entry read, "Driving drunk, classic, but to whoever's vehicle I hit, I am sorry." And there's a lot of typos in there which I had to read around, by the way. Damned if two of his law-abiding friends didn't decide to alert the police when police arrived at Cox Brown's house. They didn't check his computer, but did find a vehicle that matched damage done to the two vehicles that were hit. Police also connected pieces from the crash scene to the vehicle registered to him. Authorities say Cox Brown tried to deny his involvement until he heard the sobering evidence against him. Now, the driver in this case caught one break. He wasn't charged with drunken driving because the interview came hours after the incident, and the Facebook post isn't enough evidence to prove he was drunk. Police say the message in this case is not to be careful about what you post on Facebook, but that if you hit someone's car, stop and contact those affected before driving off. I could have made this guy the idiot of the day, but I didn't. That comes later. For now, let's just label him a callous drunk moron and move on. A cat carrying a saw and a mobile phone, yeah, you heard me right, was detained as it entered a prison gate in northeast Brazil. Prison guards were surprised when they saw a white cat crossing the main gate of the prison, its body wrapped in tape. A closer look saw the feline also carried drills, an earphone, a memory card, batteries, and a phone charger. All 263 detainees in the prison are considered suspect in the plot, which is being investigated by local police. Here's a quote that I love by a prison spokesperson. "It's tough to find out who's responsible for the actions as the cat doesn't speak." Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it can speak. I just think it doesn't want to. The cat was taken to an animal disease center to receive medical care, basically getting that tape off of it. The incident took place on New Year's Day. Well, you know how I feel about cats. I'm sure this feline is the mastermind behind all this, but let's move on. An employee at a Subway restaurant in Florida said he was fired after arguing with a customer about putting ketchup on a sandwich. The ketchup fight occurred at a Subway inside a Walmart store in Orlando, and everything seems to happen, as you know, on this program, at or near Walmart. Luis Martinez said he asked for a Philly cheesesteak sandwich with his usual accompaniments, American cheese, onions, and ketchup. Lawrence Ordonier, who was working behind the counter, said he was unable to give Martinez what he wanted. "He wants ketchup on a Philly cheesesteak, and I never put that on before. We don't even have ketchup at Subway. I've never put ketchup on anybody's sandwich," he said. The argument escalated, and Larry told an Orlando TV station that he flew off the handle. He allegedly told Martinez to fight like a man. "He threatened to kill me in front of my wife," Martinez said. Martinez called police, but by the time officers got to the Subway, Lawrence was gone. He said he was fired the next day. Lawrence was not arrested, although police reportedly forwarded the case to prosecutors. Okay, what I would like to know is, if Subway doesn't even have ketchup, why is this guy getting into such a tizzy over something he can't even offer? I mean, really? Chill, pal. Chill. Clearly, this is a guy who should not be involved in any kind of customer service. It's just some career advice for you, Larry. Okay, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Another year has come and gone, and with it, another year filled with top words and phrases, which is the reason we always invite Paul J.J. Payak back on the show. He's from the Global Language Monitor, and he spends his time tracking trends in the English language. He's on the line from Austin, Texas. Hi, Paul.
Good to talk to you again, Peter.
Nice to talk to you again, too, and Happy New Year. So you're looking back at 2012, as you often do. You look back at the year before. And
right.
What were the key phrases or words that came out of the year, and were any of them surprises to you?
Well, the biggest surprise was that there were 8 words and phrases that all spoke about the apocalypse, Armageddon, end times, things like that. And that there was this overwhelming sense that usually, you know, you can pick up the sense of the year as you look back at the words. And we're not talking about the U.S. and Canada. We're talking about global English here. So English that was from any place in the world, 1.85 billion speakers of English right now. And the number one word was actually used too, but it's just the same concept of apocalypse or Armageddon. That was a surprise. It wasn't a surprise because of the Mayan apocalypse, because we all knew that wasn't going to happen. Okay, because I actually studied pre-Hispanic Mesoamerican civilization back in college, and I know that the Mayan calendar goes on for hundreds of thousands of years, and it circles within circles. It's like saying that the Roman calendar, the calendar we use now, ends at 2000. It ends at infinity. It just keeps going. There is no logical endpoint.
Okay. So one of the things, and working as a news anchor, I get tired of saying phrases all the time in the news, and certainly near the end of the year, and quite frankly into the beginning of this one, even though it's only a few days into it, I don't ever want to hear fiscal cliff again.
Right. That's kind of interesting, too, because it's something that's heard a lot in the West, and the rest of the world it really wasn't heard, okay? You know, other than North America, you heard some in England, but even when it was around the world, it was all referring to this situation in the United States that in history is going to be looked upon as very little. I mean, people, you don't talk about the the fiscal cliffs, the votes of Congress or the Senate in 1954, 1837 or whatever. I mean, the fact that it was big in the news is because it's big in the news to this day. It's not a lasting impact.
Okay. Now, one of the other things, I mean, we all remember back in the day when the word Columbine became part of the vernacular. Are we going to see the same thing now with Newtown?
Yes, unfortunately, that we have our top names of the year. And even though Newtown, something really has to strike a chord globally to rank from the last few months of the year into the break into the rankings at all. And Newtown did that. It actually came in at number one. And it was tied with Malala Yousafzai, and that's the little girl in Pakistan that was shot for encouraging female education of young girls. And so it's kind of interesting. It's like two sides of the same coin where these tragedies both happen in relationship to young children.
Mm. Now, in this case, the two top names of the year revolve around a tragedy. Is there anything in the top list that isn't tragic in nature?
Well, you got, it depends. Kate Middleton, is that tragic?
No,
well, the fact is, it's like that we do a lot of tracking of, you know, anyone, as we rank 14 different areas. One of them is entertainment, another is fashion. And Kate has been top three names worldwide for 2 years now. And now that she's pregnant, who knows what's going to go on. But even in this year, she was number three. Ahead of, I should say, President Obama, Mitt Romney, and the London Olympics.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
But it was after Xi Jinping, who is the new prime minister or the top leader in China. He's not the prime minister. They have their own classification. But he's the number one leader in China. And he came on very late, too. But he has enormous influence over the history of 2013.
Well, how much does the time that something becomes prominent in the calendar year, how much does that play a role in what becomes or what makes your list? You know, is it one of those situations, out of sight, out of mind? It's like the Academy Awards. So people forget the movies that might have been released in January and February. They remember the films that were released in November and December.
Right. Okay. And it's very much like that, except we, our rankings, et cetera, take into account the whole year. And we actually see what words are prominent, which are gaining momentum, losing momentum. We factor all that into the final number. And I should say that in old time dictionaries, if you had three or four different instantiations of a word, citations, that would be enough to have it considered. But it might take 100 years to become part of the dictionary to make sure it has staying power. But nowadays, with the internet and internet memes and, you know, all these different things going on, instant communication, you can have, like, the word Frankenstorm, for example. It was created by a National Weather Service meteorologist, Jim Sisko, and he just put it into his release that it's going to be like a Frankenstorm because it's combining all these pieces from different storms together into a new entity. And that went globally within 48 hours. There were millions of hits.
It's interesting you bring that one up because, as you know, we've discussed this before, I also work as a television news anchor here in Canada.
Yes,
and
yes.
Our company, which ironically shares a name with yours, Global, our company sent out a directive that we were not allowed to use Frankenstorm for the reason that it seemed to make light of the power that the storm had, and it would backfire on us if the storm became extremely deadly.
Right. I actually talked to the person that decided to do that at CNN, the executive, and I told him that, well, what we did is we cited CNN and in our press release as being one of the companies that did that, and so they had to react, and they explained that, you know, just except what you said, but those people do not understand the nature of language. And the nature of language in the Western world, and with English in particular, you know, English is not French. French is held to 100,000 words because there are gatekeepers of the French language. There are no gatekeepers of the English language. I mean, we're getting new words from India and China and every place you can imagine, okay? And that's why there's over a million words in English right now. And it's interesting that there is nobody that decides what's a word. There is nobody that says, okay, you know, Peter says it or Paul says it, therefore it's an official word. we mark the words being used across the globe, but there is no person that says that's the right word and the wrong word. So when someone says, well, that might trivialize the situation, well, that's very short-sighted, because if people are using a word, that is the correct word. And to think that it could trivialize the civilization is just not understanding the nature of language, because nobody was laughing when they said Frankenstorm. They saw it as a monster storm. And English your tradition is that you don't regulate if it's acceptable or not.
Right.
And Frankenstorm was one of the ways.
Now, one of the things that we heard a lot of, and a lot of people online saw a lot of, Gangnam Style. Boy, have we heard a lot about that.
Well, talk about trivial, okay? We actually state that in our phrases, okay, in our top phrases of the year, we did not like the idea that Gangnam Style was going to be number one, and it was. But, I mean, again, you know, tradition is that you accept what the people bestow, right? The people bestow if it's proper or not. And when you have a billion users look at this video and hundreds of millions more watching other videos related to the video on YouTube across the world, I mean, there's no way you can avoid it. So it was kind of reluctantly, but again, understanding the nature of the language, it became number one. You know, that's kind of interesting. Global warming and climate change came in number two, and it's been number one or two for the last 13 years.
Now, you've done this for several years now. So do you have any sense out of which of these? And I'll just quickly go through the list of just the top 10. Gangnam Style, global warming, climate change, fiscal cliff, the deficit, God particle, rogue nukes, near Earth asteroid. Number 8's got to be my favorite. Binders full of women.
We're still trying to figure out exactly what that is, but it's very popular.
Yeah. Arab Spring and Solar Max. Those are the top 10. Now, do you have any idea? Can you gauge which will have staying power?
Well, we do have, you know, formulas that tell us what are gaining, what are losing long-term and short-term momentum. Okay, so Gangnam Style does not have long-term momentum. It has short-term momentum, and so we'd expect it to be a historical phrase, but, you know, it's maybe to be used in jocularly or some such. But global warming and climate change have been sustaining a very high pace for a long time. And like we like to say, when I grew up outside of New York City, this is before the climate change debate, I knew that 10,000 years previously, New York City was covered by 5,000 feet of ice. So I've always been aware of global warming, and evidently it's going to go like that, Earth, you know, affected by man or not. The planet warms up and cools down, and there's been four or five of these cycles in North America since in the last 400,000 years. So global warming is going to be around. Fiscal cliff, now deficit will be prominent in the West for at least 10 years because the democracies have really run into a problem finance-wise. God particle is going to be a good historical term. Rogue nukes, let's hope that they're not around, okay, but that's a term that might be interesting, but it's not going to be very prominent unless somebody actually used one, God forbid. And then near-Earth asteroid is a big one, okay, because it's like there was an asteroid that came within 4,000 miles of the U.S. Earlier this month. That's absurd.
Well, I'm going to make a prediction that goes against the grain. I don't usually make predictions, but it goes against the grain with something you said earlier, because you talked about Gangnam Style, the fact that it doesn't have staying power.
I think it does,
but not for the reasons most people would think. I think it's going to have staying power as a phrase to exemplify similar situations to what the phenomenon of Gangnam Style was in 2012. In other words, it'll become a phrase like jump the shark. Even though people don't remember what jump the shark originally came from, it came from Happy Days, but they know its meaning. I get the feeling the term Gangnam Style will have that same effect. You know, if Psy becomes a one-hit wonder and is not heard from again, that might become a term.
Okay, I'll bet you a dollar, okay? And we'll come back for this interview 50 years from now, okay? And see if it still has staying power. How about that?
Okay, it's a deal. Paul, people could always find out more information by going to the website, which is www.languagemonitor.com, correct?
Yes. That's we have 300 pages, all sorts of things on language. It's people just love it. They come to the site and they just get sucked in, and they're just reading about things that they never expected with language, but it's a fun site. So welcome to it.
I thank you very much, Paul, for being on the program with us once again.
And I'm honored to be on with you again, Peter. Thank you.
Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor. Again, you can visit their website at www.languagemonitor.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0177, and you'll find links to Paul's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It's known as the greatest show on earth. And each year, 30 million people see the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. Their performers have dazzled audiences for a century, often making news with their death-defying acts. But now, the circus is making news for a different reason, involving lawyers, not acrobats. 12 years ago, the circus was sued by some animal rights groups over its treatment of its elephants. The circus denied any mistreatment and mounted a strong defense. A federal judge finally dismissed the case, but only after the circus had to spend $20 million on lawyers. Let's be fair. Victims of lawsuit abuse shouldn't be forced to spend millions of dollars defending themselves when they've done nothing wrong. The circus fought back, and now one of the groups has to pay it $9 million. That's a good start, but lawsuits like this are turning our justice system into a circus. Find out more about how we all pay. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And for the first time in 2013, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year to you and all your nice listeners. Should I tell the people to leave Times Square? I mean, is it over or not?
You know, it's funny, since you bring up Times Square, were you there? I know I've asked you this before, and I believe you never go, right?
Well, I did one year. As a matter of fact, the year that I went the last time was 2000. And I went there in the employ of a company called Canada AM. And I sat on the stand with a lady presenter whose name escapes me at the moment, talking about New York City and New Year's Eve. So that drew me out. But other than something like that, no, I'm not going there. Because when you're with the regular people, not standing in some fancy stand with all the big deal journalists, it's horrible. I mean, it's cold. There's no place to eat. You can't make a pee. The guy standing next to you had a garlic pizza. I mean, really, you do it once in a lifetime and never, ever again, unless you're on the stand with all the hotshot journalists.
You know, watching it on television, as so many people do, millions of people do each and every year, literally around the world, it was kind of sad this year because after more than a generation, it's the first time that Dick Clark wasn't part of it. And it reminds me, being slightly older, of the first year we didn't have Guy Lombardo.
Well, now it's time for me, much to your surprise, to tell you my Dick Clark story, which you didn't know I was going to tell. My father was in the printing business, and one of his clients was Dick Clark. And he made the membership cards for his club, which was the American Bandstand. You know, the membership cards.
Right.
A picture of Dick on one side, and you'd have your name on the other side. And from time to time, when they would run short of the cards, my father would have me take a whole bunch by train, it's about an hour and a half, to the offices, and I can't remember the name of the station at this point, in Philadelphia, to deliver the emergency quantity of American Bandstand, that's it just came to me, to deliver the cards. And so I got a chance to meet Dick Clark quite a few number of times. I mean, as a kid, remember, high school kid, and he was very, very nice. And what was really very nice about him is that he always said, "Say send regards to your dad when you get back to the city." You know, and I mean, this is from a big deal client, you know, who's saying that to a teenage kid, which really made me feel like this guy thought my father was a good guy, and, you know, kids love to hear that. So anyway, I have a very pleasant memory of Dick Clark, that's for sure.
He will definitely be missed. Now, one of the other things that was in the news just before the beginning of the new year was that publication in a New York tabloid of all the names and addresses of handgun permit holders. Now, how did that go over in your neck of the woods?
Well, I mean, I guess if you hate gun owners, you think it's a great way to get even with them or something. And that's the very problem that's come out of, I think, out of the Connecticut shootings. You have everybody who has a little bit of a hidden agenda. The Daily News has been doing what it's been doing to increase its circulation. The NRA is using it to raise money. The anti-gun people are using it to raise money. I mean, you know, like everybody's trying to put their finger into the pot. So what the Gannett newspapers did, who are, is a chain of, you know, newspapers throughout the United States, in our three suburban counties, Westchester, Dutchess, and trying to think which was the other one. I think it was Fairfield County in Connecticut. They printed the names of people who have gun permits, which, I mean, really means absolutely nothing. I mean, I don't know what, you know, what is it going to do other than draw attention to them, give their home addresses, and what, incite people to go and do violence on them? So it was a very nasty, abusive thing. But I don't have to tell you about the media because you've been in it for a few years.
Well, I'm going to take the other side of the coin, and it's not that I'm someone who is certainly pro-NRA because I'm not. But the negative side that I don't think anybody's talking about is if I'm a burglar, I now know all the people who don't own guns.
Yeah, well, that's a very good thing. But, you know, but at the same time, I spent most of my adult lifetime shooting guns, and I can, being in the Army, and I can tell you that unless you really know what you're doing, it's a very dangerous thing to have. And this is why, and I've said this before, and a lot of people say, nah, Peter can't be knowing what he's talking about. I am knowing about it. In all my years in the taxi industry in New York City, I've never run across any cab driver, any New York City cab driver who carries a gun with them. I know that's an astounding statement to make, but they don't. And the reason they don't, is certainly on my advice, is that unless you know how to use it, unless you're a Clint Eastwood, having a gun is going to be of no help to you at all. Mm.
Meanwhile, I understand on another point that there was a beached whale in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, I put the picture on the website, which is, you know, really a nifty picture because it shows the New York City Fire Department hosing down the whale with salt water, not fresh water, in an attempt to keep it alive, maybe to get it back into the ocean. And, you know, it was a big story, and it was a nice story, but a lot of people here in New York said, well, no big deal, it happens all the time. Well, it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens a lot because people forget that our East River is an estuary. Our Hudson River is an estuary. Our Harlem River is an estuary. So we're sitting right smack in the ocean. And although you might not think of it at first blush, it's not unusual for us to have whales and sharks floating around in our waters. So be careful where you stick your toe, folks.
Absolutely. And on another note, I understand that in your neck of the woods, I've seen this story actually, not only in the United States, but in Canada, but you could end up costing or paying more for stuff that you're buying when you're shopping online based on where you live.
Yeah, they do it by the zip code. And as a matter of fact, I ran that experiment with some people in other parts of the country going on to some of the websites. And I'm not going to mention the websites because I don't really want to attack them. That's their business. But these are big websites. Now, I live in 121. That's 10021, which is probably, don't everybody get excited, the richest zip code in the United States. I mean, it really is the heavy hitters. And so what I did is I went on and I priced some things, and then I asked some other people in other parts of the country to go on to the same site and price some things, and the prices were different. It was more for my zip code than the other, which is kind of interesting because I have found the reverse with supermarkets. In New York City, the supermarkets in the richer neighborhoods actually charge less than the supermarkets in the poor areas. So if you go in to a supermarket in Harlem or El Barrio, Spanish Harlem, you are really going to be hosed. It's a very, very strange phenomenon, but I guess they know what they're doing.
But you know, Peter, it also goes deeper than that. It's not only by your zip code. For instance, if you were using your zip code on your computer on a PC, you might actually be charged less than someone who's in your same area code on a Mac.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I could understand that. I mean, it's you know, it sounds like maybe I'm paranoid and you're paranoid, but the fact of the matter is there's a lot of stuff going on, and I can only speak for the United States, which is really pretty sleazy.
And there's also another thing, too. If you, by the cookies that are in your computer, if you go to a particular place and look at an item on multiple occasions, you might find that when you're ready to purchase it, the price has gone up because you have searched for it on multiple occasions.
Yeah, well, that's it. So we're all subject to this type of thing.
The other way
I don't
around
know what the solution is. The solution is I am going to lead an armed rebellion in the United States. In other words, I'm going to take some close friends, and we're all going to go into the hills, you know, as freedom fighters. The only problem is I need a horse and a sword. You know, you can't lead a freedom fight unless you have a horse and a sword. So as soon as I raise enough money to buy a horse and a sword, then I will start the revolution.
I'm sure you could purchase that horse and sword online, but then...
I may have to do that because, I mean, what kind of leader would I be without a horse and a sword?
There you go. And by the way, the last example that I gave you, there is one way around it. Just simply do your searching on one computer, and when you decide to make your purchase... make your purchase from another computer, which has not gone to those sites for the to search before.
Hey, you are already a member of the revolution.
There you go. Meanwhile, before we let you go, sir, I understand you have a celebrity sighting of the week.
Yeah, it's a former commie, pinko, tree-hugging liberal, but I always loved her. I'm talking about the Redgrave girl. And if you take a look at my website, I have that picture very, very light. She's in a play in Manhattan, Vanessa Redgrave. And she's in a play in Manhattan. I saw her in Times Square. That's not a picture that I took, but it was a picture that I found, a recent picture of hers. If you look at the skin, how smooth it is, and it's not retouched because I examined it very carefully, this is a good-looking woman for an old broad. I mean, she really is. Every woman should hope to have such skin as you enter into your twilight years. In other words, she looked very, very pleasant, and she looked somewhat more conservative than she was in her troublemaking days. And I guess that happens to everybody. You get more conservative as you get older.
I'm sure your lovely bride has great skin as well. By the way, is she still doing T-shirts?
No. She's now retired and enjoying life. At my order, I dethroned her.
Well, you know, you are living in the most expensive zip code in the United States, so
I guess. But don't everybody get excited about it because there's regular people here. But we're talking about the per capita,
okay.
And the 121 happens to be the east side of Manhattan. I mean, for instance, Madoff was a neighbor of mine. I'm not proud to say that, but that's the type of people who live here.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. People can find your website, Peter, they can email you, rather, at peter@gabby.com. And they can also find your website at www.gabby.com.
And thanks to you, I now have a Facebook page.
Ah, yes.
Okay, and it's thanks to this gentleman who helped me get it going properly, maybe much to his chagrin, but I have just discovered it. I was a little late on the learning curve, but... now I'm finding it a lot of fun. So if anybody wants to come and schmoes, I'm not selling anything. Please do.
Thank you very much, sir. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is The Stuff File.
And we have time for just one more item before we wrap things up here on The Stuff File program. And of course, that item would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
DeMarco Alonzo Thomas, age 30, called police in Tucson, Arizona with an incredible story. He was a courier, he said, for drug dealers. It was his job to smuggle cash, drug money, for a local cartel. He said he had lost $20,000 from the latest suitcase of cash, and he was afraid he'd be killed by the cartel if he couldn't explain it adequately. So, would officers give him a note to say that they had confiscated it? Well, instead, the investigators arrested him on suspicion of money laundering and searched his personal belongings. Sure enough, $17,000 of the missing cash, and I'm doing air quotes here, was in his jeans, in his own suitcase, and another $3,000 was found in his wallet. Investigators gave Thomas a receipt for the confiscated cash, but he refused to sign it. Now, why? Oh, why would someone running drug money come up with a harebrained scheme to try to stay in the middle by playing the cops off against a murderous drug cartel? One reason, and one reason only. Okay, in this case, actually two reasons. One, he wishes to be dead soon, in which case, we might save him for a future Darwin file story. And most importantly, number two, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0177. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. At the website, you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0177. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.